CB Shuckin' Jive.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to this edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder, and I'll be the host tonight. It's good to be back after a little 4th of July vacation. Hope y'all had a good holiday. We did. Let's get around and say hello to everybody that's here tonight, starting out west in the lair. The legend is there. How you doing tonight, sir?
I am doing very great. Thank you, Mr. Gilder. Now that I've got past the improper validation part, and I think magically have repaired my Skype connection to where we won't have static and breakup anymore.
Yeah, it's good, man. You're coming through loud and clear. We're going to add you to the tech staff here at Zeus Digital Marketing. Next time I
come
I have
with
problem,
a very high price.
Yeah, man. Next time I have people with those kind of issues, I'm going to send them straight to you.
Do it.
So, did you bring a legendorial with you tonight?
Oh, what's God, it about? I didn't write it, but I got a good one for you.
Oh, that's good, man. Right. You're going to shoot from the hip. That's great.
That's what I've been doing the last 3 or 4 weeks because I was just taking up too much time, and Bopper was getting shortchanged, and, you know, Bopper's segments are always so interesting, and I mean that sincerely, Bobby.
We're putting Bopper on first tonight. He's in the A-chair tonight. So
he's ready to go. Yep.
Coastal
yeah,
Jack
so as long as I'm ad-libbing him, I can do what I want.
There you go. That's what Hugh does. Sometimes he reads him. Coastal Jack Walker's in the house. How you doing tonight, CJ?
Doing great, man.
Did you bring a Carolina Race Place historic race finish with you?
Yes, I did.
Where are we going tonight, man?
We are going to the great state of Virginia.
Virginia.
One of the old familiar tracks that we do from time to time.
Wow.
South Boston.
South Boston Speedway. Yeah. Awesome. Can't wait. And right there he is next to him from Charlotte, North Carolina, home of Bobby's Auto Parts, Bobby himself.
And a new Zaxby's.
We got a new Zaxby's up there? Yes, highest chicken in the world right there, man.
Yes, and everybody went so nuts that opened the July the 3rd, they had to have the sheriff out there directing traffic.
Wow.
Grid.
Don't you think Zaxby's is high?
I have never been to a Zaxby's in my life. I mean, ain't been to one.
Lunch at Zaxby's will cost you $13.
I don't know.
They got a great chicken salad sandwich. God, that thing's good.
Well, how much is it?
I don't know. It's about $7, I think. Just with
the sandwich. I have never
throw in
been.
Some French fries and a drink, you're $13.
Oh, yeah. They have crinkly fries. I think they just go down to get them O'Riders. Huh. That's what they look like.
I like it. It's good food. I like the Zensation salad.
Yeah, that's what I used to eat when I would go there, Zensation.
Yeah. I mean, it's expensive. You don't want to take 4 or 5 people with you. You spend a lot of money there. You got that many people taking
them to McDonald's.
How
many people we got here? Bopper, you, Jack, me, you. That's 5. Take us.
we'll go to McDonald's and eat a Happy Meal.
I don't do McDonald's.
Okay. That makes it that much
also
cheaper.
Also, don't do KFC.
Makes it that much cheaper.
Yeah, that's right. That's one less we have
Tim,
to worry about.
Tim, I was going to try to get your friend, but I started all this too late, your friend Henry Jones to come on tonight.
Augusta.
Yeah, Augusta, Georgia.
You couldn't get him?
Well, I got off the ground too late.
Oh, okay.
I think it just all... Maybe we could get this again another time. But anyway, I was trying to get... You know him good, don't you?
Oh, yeah. He and I work on ARPS pretty closely. So I do.
Well, maybe sometime.
Yeah. Did you talk to him today?
Or? No, I just sent him. And it was real late this afternoon because I was... there was a real interesting Facebook page that I don't know if he started our Facebook article. he started it, or he certainly added the he actually started it and added all most of the detail.
Which what was that about?
Well, we just might talk about that
okay,
when it
well,
gets to my segment.
Suspense.
We got to get the Hewlin and the
all right.
The layer.
Let's find out what Hugh has got. He's back. We were on vacation last week. He was on vacation the week before that, and the week before that, and the week before that.
Yep.
And three other times this year.
That's right. And Brandon but, going on some more.
But he's here tonight.
Cool whiskey.
How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good.
Good. What do you got for Hugh's views on the news tonight? You got something? Oh, it's written down.
I have scribbled.
It's a quarter page. It looks like five sentences from here.
It's
one, two, five. It's five sentences on there. If that takes you more than a minute and a half, we got a problem.
It's food for thought.
Oh, those are just
Manning
bullet points.
You got it.
Those are bullet points, yeah. Talking points.
Talking about brie cheese.
All right.
Well, at least that food's not costing you, Jeff.
Yeah, no kidding.
Y'all will have to do without me on the chat line tonight because I can't make it come up.
Where's your pink headphones at?
They're still laying over there in a package.
Right beside his Mouseketeer ears.
Hey.
M-I-C-K-E-Y.
So we'll let Bopper start things off tonight, and I'll come over and see if I can get you on the all website, right. All right? Bopper, take it away.
There used to be and Jack, you may remember this. There used to be a big time go-kart track at Darlington, South Carolina, just down Highway 52 from the big Darlington Raceway.
Yes.
It was not very far.
Yeah, it was on the going out of town.
Yeah.
And on the left, I think.
Yeah. It might have been a couple of 3 miles, you know, on past the big track. It was a paved road course.
Right.
And man, it was like the Daytona of go-kart racing back in the late 70s. And all these little dirt tracks, there was in the area, and every area had these little go-kart dirt tracks. And every once in a while, they would have this big, humongous race at Darlington. The name of it was the Carolina Kartway, Carolina International Kartway. And as a matter of fact, in 1978, the World Karting Association, WKA, had the four-stroke nationals at Darlington.
Wow.
I mean, it was big now. It was some big goings on. And I was into go-karting in those days and went there.
It was kind of like a road course.
It was a road course. I don't know if you've ever, if the name Barnesville, Georgia means anything to you, but Barnesville, Georgia is probably the granddaddy of all big-time go-kart tracks, and it was a paved road course. And Darlington was very, very similar in layout, design, and everything to Barnesville. Both of them had this real long straightaway, sort of like Pocono. And it was flat as a flitter, no banking. And at the very end of that straightaway was a sharp hairpin to the left. I mean, you had to come flying down that straightaway, and you had to get on the brakes, I mean, real hard to get around there. And then there was a series of S's and so on and so forth. Eventually you got back to the long front stretch, which was about the only place you could pass. But anyway, that was Darlington, Darlington International Kartway, and it might be on good old Google Earth, now that I think about it. Probably is. Seemed like I looked there one time and there was like a mobile home lot on it or something like that. But I used to go there every now and then and did not have a clue and was not very competitive, because you talk about being out of your element and being in the midst of some big timers. That was it. And there was a guy there who run in modified and in open competition. Those are two different, over the two top classes. And modified was almost no rules, but open meant exactly that. You just had to have a one-cylinder, one spark plug engine, four-stroke. And everybody in those days run five-horse Briggs and Stratton, or at least they started out as Briggs engines. But this one team run Wisconsin motors, the only ones I ever saw anywhere use Wisconsin motors, and they was fast. They looked almost like a Briggs, except the carburetor and the exhaust header was on opposite sides of the block than a Briggs was. But other than that, it was pretty close. And the guy that drove them, the modified and the open, was named Jack Pennington. This was in 1978. Jack Pennington was racing at Darlington Kartway and doing great with a Wisconsin, and they run that by choice. And it wasn't too long after all of that that he was in this was like 1978, 79, along in there. 10 years later, he's in Busch Grand National. And then in 1990, he's in Winston Cup. In the meantime, in the decade of the '80s, he went from go karts to dirt late models, which he got in on the early days of the plexiglass sideboard cars, the NDRA, and all of that kind of stuff. The big time, the first wave of big money, big time organized dirt late models. Jack Pennington, he was the man, or one of them. Certainly, he was a name that commanded respect anywhere at any time, and went to all the big races and won a lot of them. Eventually, Jack Pennington would be voted in 2006. He was voted into the National Dirt Late Model Hall of Fame, which is housed in Florence, Kentucky. Now, he's still very much alive and well, and his son, Travis Pennington, is coming along now and has a lot of potential his own self. But what was interesting was this article that I kind of knew about, kind of knew a little bit about this, but I didn't know the details. And as it turns out, Henry Jones, whom I just got too late to get on the show, was the manager of Jack Pennington Fan Club back in the day. If you'll remember, 1990 was the year of Rob Moroso, who would win the NASCAR Rookie of the Year award in Winston Cup competition. But he would win it posthumously, if that's, you know, he got killed late in the year. Remember that, in the car crash? Well, Rob Moroso and Jack Pennington battled tooth and nail that whole year. But before the year was over, Rob Moroso was killed. He didn't make it to the end of the year. Among other things that Henry wrote, let me get him pulled up here. The man who got the raw deal from NASCAR Brass in the 1990 Rookie of the Year Award was working his way up through the ranks for years. Not the first or the last, but one of the few of the old bull breed who fought it to the top with talent only to be advised that he was not the best in front of a camera and one of the least to express his true opinions. Henry goes on to say that that year of 1990, when Jack was battling for the Rookie of the Year award, he rolled into Darlington for his first time, and he spun out the first three times in practice in turn one. He talked to Darrell Waltrip a few minutes and got it figured out. He finished third in the Busch race at Talladega that he should have won if not for a valve spring failure. He led the Daytona 500 in a short track car that was rented. He was a one-car team using a one-car trailer and a driver headed for greatness. Then the NASCAR brass asked him to set... That might be...
That's what I was thinking.
No, it's from New York, unless Henry's moved. Then the... Now, this is something that I had never heard before. The NASCAR brass asked Jack Pennington to set out of the Phoenix race, which would have been late in the year, after Moroso, after his death, and which would have been late in the year. In exchange, if Pennington would do that, the deal was he was going to get a top ride for 1991. That was sort of insinuated. So Jack set out the race. Then they awarded Rob Moroso the Rookie of the Year award, although he had already been killed in the accident. So, I mean, that was, on the one hand, a great honor, but how does being, you know, Rookie of the Year, is it, the concept is someone that's going to go forward and advance their career. How does it make sense to award someone killed in action a Rookie of the Year award? You know, I mean, that's an arguable point. I mean, it's not, Rookie of the Year is not to commemorate a person's life. It is a statement of their future. But anyway, all of that is history. And Henry says that NASCAR used a clause in the fine print stating that they would make a final choice on the Rookie of the Year, even though Pennington had outperformed Moroso on the track in head-to-head competition in the early 1990s. Rookies were required to run one half of the schedule for the award. In the aftermath of all that, when Jack Pennington would never race another NASCAR race again. Got to reading, doing a little checking up on that. Of course, you don't have to check up to know that Rob Moroso's father was who? Dick Moroso.
Mr. Moroso.
Mr. Moroso, who owns, and I guess he still does, and also Moroso Performance Products. If your son is in contention to Rookie of the Year and your name and you're the Moroso Performance, you ain't going to let some backwoodser with a one-horse trailer and an old raggedy car win Rookie of the Year. I mean, that's, it just is what it is. This was in 1990. This is before the wheels were up. When all the glory years was yet to come in NASCAR in 1990. We was just getting to the good stuff. And you can see the maneuvering in the backroom deals. I mean, it had started long before then, but this is a case in point. And the Jack Pennington story was among the last of people that started with nothing and could have made it, you know, just by sheer effort and talent. But as it sadly turned out then, even that was not enough. At the end of the day, the talent and the effort and all of that was didn't exactly equate with what the future of a potential sponsor and connections and all of that might have been. So just a little...
I was reading, not that you can believe Wikipedia, okay, but I was thinking about one thing I was looking for when you were talking about how old is he now. You
know? He is, he's about 64.
He's 2 years older than me,
yeah.
I think. But it says he led the Daytona 500 in 1990.
That would have been the year that Derek Cope won, wouldn't it? Wasn't that 1990?
I think so, yeah.
Did Derek win the 500?
I think that was the Derek Cope year.
I was thinking.
I remember Cope winning.
Yep.
I don't remember that. Said he led six laps.
He led six laps.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what this says. I don't know if.
And Henry says that was a rented car and it was a short track car.
Really?
He's a wheel man. I'll tell you what. He was a wheel man.
My first memory of Jack Pennington, Bobby, was actually at Myrtle Beach. He had a Plymouth, an orange Plymouth that he was racing.
A what color Plymouth?
Orange.
Orange.
Yep. And I can't remember where that car came from, but I knew one time where it came from.
It wasn't like a
Petty Plymouth. It was some, might have been a Jabe Thomas Plymouth.
When he ran go-karts, they were always orange number 74. Yeah, that was his number back then.
I remember it being orange. It was like a... orange with black top, I think.
But that's pretty incredible that NASCAR, since Moroso obviously was out of the running when he got in the traffic. I mean, that is very unfortunate, and I'm not downplaying the fact that he was killed and so on and so forth. That is a tragedy. But to ask someone else, don't race anymore because you might wind up with better results, and he ain't there to battle you.
So what's his relationship to Free? From the same area.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know either, but in that Daytona 500 you're talking about, Jack Pennington drove the Derek Close Oldsmobile. He was four laps behind and finished in 25th position. I'm trying to find out lap leaders. Jack Pennington led laps 45 to 50.
Pretty cool.
And that is apparently all he led, and that is thanks to Greg Fielding's 40-plus years of stock car racing.
But that's pretty cool for the first time he'd ever been there.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Wouldn't you think so in an independent car like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if it's a short track car.
He had Jack Pennington had potential, just rode all over him.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have been one of them. But it's also an illustration how that is not all that's necessary, in 1990.
That was in also the era of the beginning of the politically correct.
That was 1990 predates Jeff Gordon. I think Gordon might have been in Bush at that time, but he hadn't made it to Cup yet either.
Yeah. Well,
'92 at Cup. In fact, not until 93, really, because only 92 race was the last race.
Well, Jack Pennington's first Cup race was at Rockingham in 89.
Also, this is kind of interesting. Rob Moroso's first Cup race was in 89 at Charlotte. And guess who he was driving for? Just guess. Just guess. You'll be right.
Junior Johnson.
Well, no.
Hendrick.
Hendrick, exactly. Exactly.
Tim, stand by. I'm going to try to add Cody. If it bumps you off, I'll add you back, okay?
Cody could know a lot about Jack Pennington. But anyway,
Cody, he also ran some ARCA races.
Jack, crap.
So Rob Moroso's driving Hendrick stuff, and Jack's out there in an old Oldsmobile that he rented.
Yep. And winning, and beating Rob Moroso.
Had a short track car.
So that just don't fit the narrative. You know, that ain't going to work.
So, Tim, I'm going to have to drop you and then add you both back.
That's fine.
So this is NASCAR in 1990. That's a long time ago.
It sure is.
That is a long time.
It doesn't seem like it, but hell, that's 27 years ago.
Yeah, that's 27 years ago.
Yeah, and not a lot has changed.
Well, attendance has gone down.
Boy, they was on the curve on the upswing in 1990.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that was
the... Were they ever?
They were...
Almost every race that I worked, of course, I was on the inside looking out, and you could stand just before the race started. You could stand on the track and look up in the stands, and you couldn't find. Yes, there may have been a seat or two here and there, but they also probably were going to get beer or go to the bathroom.
At that point in time, every one of us, there's not any way that any of us would have ever guessed it would be in the state that it's in right
absolutely.
Now.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Not even be able to comprehend the downward fall.
Cody, you there?
I am.
What do you know about Jack Pennington?
Well, I know a few things. We inducted him in the Hall of Fame. 2016, 2015, something like that.
I
was listening to your whole conversation earlier, so I'm up to date of where you are in your story, Bobby.
Cool.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of at the end of it. It's just a sad reality. I mean, that ain't the first story that ended like that. There's been countless.
Cody, do you know if he's related to Free Pennington at all?
Not that I know of, because Jack is from Georgia, I thought.
Yeah, you're originally Augusta, but yep. I don't think he still lives in Georgia, but I don't think he lives in Augusta.
Not that I know of, but, yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean anything, so.
Yeah, he was a wheel man, but that's not all that's required. I mean, that's kind of, especially now. Okay, back to you, Jeff, in the eye in the sky.
All right, it's time for Hugh's Views on the News. Take it away, Hugh.
All right, I've got it. As most of you already know, silly season has begun.
Oh, man.
And I believe it's going to be really interesting this year. I guess the biggest question is that who's going to fill the number 88 seat? And if, no matter who they pick, what kind of success are they going to have, and are they going to be able to attract any of the junior nation to go with it? Looks like we found out today who's going to take the Kenseth ride. All right, Jones. But then that leaves, is Danica's seat going to be filled by somebody else? Is she going to keep it? Will she have any sponsorship?
Won't be a fig bar.
No, definitely not a fig bar.
Nope, that's already going by the wayside. And then there's some names that I've heard kicked around. Bubba Wallace. Will he get a full-time ride?
He'll get the 88, is my prediction.
You think so? That's all right, good.
Bubba Wallace is your next Bubba Nation.
Is Carl Edwards going to come back?
No.
No?
No, don't think so. What about...
He's going to be in the run for the Senate.
No. What's his name? It drove a 16.
Greg Biffle.
Biffle. Nope, is he coming back?
He's done.
Nope.
No.
He's done.
Well... Any more thoughts and comments from the peanut gal? I mean, the round table?
Well, you know, I think there needs to be some eyes on that young William Byron. I know he's only 19 years old, but that kid's one heck of a driver.
Oh, yep. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and Alex Bowman is another one. And there was one other one. My brother is always singing the virtues of it. I can't remember right now.
Well, there's a bunch of young guys coming up that deserve a seat that, unless they have sponsorship, aren't going to get it. That's the sad reality of where we are in NASCAR today. And I hate that for a lot of these young guys that have really got the talent. And, you know, Bobby's segment just was an example of that. Somebody with the talent, but maybe not the finesse and maybe not the sponsorship, and just kind of cast him aside.
Do you think some of these young guys will actually go into the trucks or go into Xfinity, or will they go straight to Cup? Are we getting to the point where some of this talent with the right money is going straight to Cup?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
I don't know, man. I think we may be.
I think we can see that. Yeah. Well, Suarez almost did.
Yeah.
He was running Xfinity, but...
he wasn't running it long.
No, he wasn't running it long. And no disrespect meant to him, but he bought that ride.
I think one of the finest drivers to come along in years is Larson.
Yeah.
Without question.
There's a lot of good short track drivers coming up. You know, Ty Majeski, Harrison Burton, those kind of guys. John Hunter Nemechek, although he's pissed off a lot of people. He's a good driver, though.
He's a good driver, but he needs to learn some new manners.
Yeah,
they said the same thing about
Keselowski.
They said the same thing about Keselowski.
They said that about that Earnhardt guy, too.
Yeah.
When he was coming up, pissing a lot of people off.
Yep.
All right, Coastal Jack Walker, time for a Carolina race place, historic race finish, man. South Boston, Virginia.
We're going to do it.
Straight out of the archives from the Carolina Race Place .zoomshare.
Yeah, man.
.com.
.com. No, yeah, don't leave the .com off, or else someone will be out in space trying to find it.
Brought to you in part by Bobby's Auto Parts in Shlope, North Carolina.
All right, here we go. Here we go. South Boston. Labor Day weekend in 1963 was a big one for modified sportsman racing in Virginia. On Saturday night, August 31st, South Boston Speedway held a 267-lap, 100-mile NASCAR modified sportsman race. South Boston Speedway is a 3/8-mile paved oval, which is still in operation today. This race was the final regular season ending race at South Boston for 1963. Many of the drivers entered in the South Boston race also raced at Richmond Southside Speedway on Friday night. That event was a 400-lap race won by Ray Hendrick. One of the drivers, Ed Flimke of New Britain, Connecticut, had his accelerator stick sending him over the guardrail and rolling his car end over end. On Saturday night, He was at South Boston with a sore hand, but ready to race again.
Who was that?
Chasing NASCAR National Sportsman points, Ed Flemke. Okay. When the South Boston race got underway, Ray Hendrick and Runt Harris swapped the lead for the first two-thirds of the race. On lap 193, while Hendrick was leading, Runt Harris made a move on the outside, but got caught between a lapped car and the guardrail, losing valuable time. Ted Harefield, who had been running with the leaders, made his move on Hendrick with 36 laps to go. Harefield was able to pass Hendrick on lap 231 and held on to the checkered flag on lap 267. Ted Harefield won $1,000 for the victory. There were 22 cars from the 34-car starting field running at the finish. So here's the way they finished. South Boston Speedway, South Boston, Virginia, 267-lap modified sportsman race, August 31st, 1963. The winner, Ted Harefield, Richmond, Virginia, in a modified, followed by Ray Hendrick, Richmond, Virginia, in a modified, Bob Russell, New Egypt, New Jersey, in a sportsman car, highest finishing sportsman, Perk Brown, Spray, North Carolina, modified, Eddie Krause, Glen Allen, Virginia, in a modified, James Hayes, Norena, North Carolina, in a sportsman, Gil Hearn, Miami, Florida, in a modified, Jay Eller, Ridgeway, Virginia, in a sportsman, Paul Radford, Furham, Virginia, in a modified. Coming in 10th, Joe Thurman, Rocky Mount, Virginia, in a modified. Followed by Ed Flemke, New Britain, Connecticut. Carl Burris, Leakesville, North Carolina. Jimmy Mayers, Tacoma Park, Maryland. Wendell Scott, Danville, Virginia. Bill Burge, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Billy Hensley, Ridgeway, Virginia. Glenn Owen, Danville, Virginia, Melvin Creasy, Lynchburg, Virginia, Melvin Smith, Newport, Virginia, Mel Groom, Richmond, Virginia, came in 20th, Pee Wee Elwanger from Roanoke, Virginia, was 21st, Sonny Hutchins, Richmond, Virginia, Al Grenna, Fredericksburg, Virginia, Runt Harris, Richmond, Virginia, coming in 25th, Henry Barber, Reidsville, North Carolina, Jack Johnson, Danville, Virginia, Redfoot, Southington, Connecticut, Bob McGinnis, Danville, Virginia, Mel Bradley, Richmond, Virginia, coming in 30th, Dave Roby, followed by Harvey Henderson, Clinton, Maryland, Clarence Pickerell, Ridgeway, Virginia, John Govinia, White Plains, New York, E.J. Brewer, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, was the 34th and final car. So that was a big field, and a lot of racing in 2 days. Yeah. 400 laps at Richmond and 267 at South Boston.
That's a full weekend.
But, you know, think about that. Wow.
Yeah, that was a lot.
A lot of
that's
racing.
That's cool, man. Yeah. How many times have you said Red Foot in the last 8 years?
A lot. And Ed Flemke and Ray Hendrick.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's difficult to dig up this stuff, but the tracks that had good PR guys posted a lot of stuff in some of the racing papers and newspaper accounts and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, over and over, you get the same speedways going down in history.
Have the same basic field.
Yep.
Add one or take away, add 10 or take away 10, depending on what time of year it was and what how much they paid.
What's the date on that, Jack?
And I don't think I've ever had one where we didn't have a new driver that we named for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always one
you
or two.
You always find somebody that you never heard of.
August 31st, 1963, Bobby.
1963.
That's a cool time
in the
modified.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Cody Densmore is among us. How are you doing tonight, Cody?
Well, I'm doing pretty good.
Good, man. Good. What do you want to talk about tonight?
Anything you want to talk about. I wasn't actually planning on being on today, so I didn't have time to gather up any information or anything.
So it's going to be an Ask Cody segment.
Sure.
All right, folks, take it away. Ask Cody something.
How's your job?
That's busy. Real busy.
Summertime.
What is your official position at the track this year?
Operations manager.
Operations. Oh, that sounds real impressive.
Yeah.
Did it come with a big raise?
I got a few pennies, right?
Well, that's something.
A few pennies is better than no pennies.
So basically, I'm responsible for all the track maintenance, track workers, the go karts, the fleet. So it's a big job, but I'm glad to be there.
Are you up on the Georgia Racing Hall of Fame goings on for this year? And you got anything there you can tell us that might be coming? Or?
Yeah, we definitely need volunteers. Unfortunately, a majority of our volunteer staff is, kind of getting up in age and harder to, be active at the museum like we once were. So, we still have different events here and there. We've got the Lakewood reunion coming up this, I think it's the 29th of this month. So later this year. So, that's good. But I think as a whole, and I think everybody here can agree, it's getting harder and harder to get the history out there because the people that were in the history are no longer with us.
Absolutely true.
And it just, more and more go every year, every month. And so all these reunions, and Jeff, the ones that we used to put on, both the museum, the Georgia Racing Hall of Fame, and, everywhere, it's a shame that it's your attendance gets lower every year.
Yeah. And the next generation, I always thought in starting Racers Reunion that it would be a never-ending cycle of history and celebration of history. But when you get out of the drivers that drove in the 50s and 60s and some in the 70s, there's not a whole lot of people there interested in being contacted, being a part of reunions or that kind of thing. Maybe that'll happen later. I don't know. Maybe they're not old enough yet. Maybe they got other things to do. I don't know what the answer is there.
The thing that I've learned, and I know I've said it on here before, is just that the people of my generation just don't care about racing.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised the amount of people, I'd say, in my demographic that are actually sports car fans, sports car road racing, and drag racing, because if you have a muscle car, you can go to your drag strip and pay $10-$20, make a pass, and you had fun because you done it.
Yep.
Sports car racing, I know I've talked about it before, there's various types of ways that you can do like autocross and road racing for actually a pretty reasonable amount of money. And then stock car racing is just the exact opposite.
Oh, it's out of everybody's league, yeah.
So, yeah. Like we were talking about earlier, unless you have money, a sponsor, or you just hit the lottery, it's just right. Not feasible. So I just don't think anybody in my generation can relate, and that's unfortunate.
So I tell you, it's tough in my generation too. I was texting back and forth with my daughter-in-law. Love my daughter-in-law Misty, Dustin's wife. She's a huge race fan, short track race fan, dirt, doesn't matter what it is, big time race fan. And she was texting me. She says Dustin and I are just reminiscing the good old days of racing. We need a race car. You need to get in a race car. We need a race car. I said, nothing I'd love better than that, but let me state the facts. We need a truck. We need a trailer of some sort. We need a garage to keep it in. We need lots of tools. And, oh, by the way, we still need a race car.
And money.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Money with a capital M.
So, I mean, it's a monumental thing to do. And, I mean, I can't imagine it right now. Can't imagine how to ever put that together again, So I can imagine how that would be with, younger people too. It's hard to fathom. And we were just talking about Jack when you were reading off those races. Almost every time, every race you read, there are new people in it. It doesn't happen anymore.
Yep.
It does not happen anymore. For what reason you said, Cody. Yep.
And you think about Jack Pennington. I mean, I'm not going to say it's impossible to find somebody like that again, but it's extremely hard and extremely rare to find somebody that, even if they have the talent, what can they do for it? Well, how can you show your own talent when you don't have the money?
That's the point. Yeah.
Your car is worth somebody else's engine, yeah. You know. So, yeah.
Cody, Patrick Reynolds wants to know what track do you think will Chase Elliott's first win come at?
Well, I don't really know what's coming up on the schedule, to be honest with you.
So you're thinking it's going to be this year?
I would hope so this year, and I would say it's going to be a mile and a half.
That narrows it down.
I'd say so.
I would venture out to say that he's got a good chance at Talladega, but so do 39 other people have a good chance at Talladega.
Talladega has a way of leveling the field out.
Yeah, it does. So I'd venture out to say he's done good at Darlington. The Fall Charlotte race. I don't know if we've raced Kansas yet or not. Because to me, Kansas, Kentucky, and Chicago, I mean, they all look the same. You know, just like Atlanta, Charlotte, and Texas, all that. But Chicago, I know he finished second there last year. So I would say the mile and a half suits him the best. Even though he was a great short track racer in NASCAR, in NASCAR, he hasn't really had a good run at a short track yet. And, you know, growing up, it's all he raced, all he knew. But once he got to NASCAR, he kind of adapted to the bigger tracks. So,
all right.
Have you got the siren at the museum all oiled up ready?
Oh, we've got it. Just we need an opportunity to, you know, piss off some neighbors. I tell you, it's funny because
they were talking about that on the radio broadcast or TV broadcast.
Yeah, I saw that.
At a race or two ago, they were wondering if they would crank up the siren, and the consensus was absolutely.
You know, it's funny because Gordon started doing that. Gordon Perkle started doing that again when Chase started winning Bandolero races and late model races, but you know, they're kind of few and far between. I think there was one time around 2012 where he won four or five races in a row, you know, in the span of a month or two. So it was getting to work, but especially when the nationwide deal came together, Xfinity, whatever you want to call it, there was people calling into the sheriff's office. They thought tornadoes were going off. It was bothering them, and you know, it's funny because the dispatchers was trying to explain, well, you know, Chase Elliott won a race. This is a tradition. It's been here for 30 years, so
where have you
you're
been?
Just going to have to deal with it for a little bit, you know.
That's cool. All right, folks, that's it for our Ask Cody segment for the night. Tim, take it away, buddy.
Okay, I want to broach the subject of the fact that NASCAR has long been denying that it was started or came about from the moonshine days. However, over what I've seen from NASCAR in the past week alone, I'm seriously convinced that there is a moonshine still right inside that little door inside the Toyota injector into Daytona International Speedway. Now, let me explain. They are working on a new vocabulary, a totally new, everything is new. Did you see today that Richmond International Raceway is going to invest $30 million in a, get this now, reimagined Richmond International Raceway. They're going to supposedly make an area in the infield where 8,000 fans who can hack the amount of tickets it's going to cost can be in there, so they can be closer to victory lane, be closer to the drivers, can be closer to the cars. And no telling what they're going to charge you to get there, but I think reimagining for $30 million, that's kind of crazy. Now let's move on to Steve O'Donnell's magnificent announcement that he made, I think yesterday, that NASCAR is very aggressively pursuing new manufacturers to come into the sport. Well, Steve, I got a clue for you, buddy. The old deal where you run on Sunday and sell on Monday doesn't mean a hill of beans when you've got everything out there exactly the same except for the decals on the cars. Now, how do you expect, who are you trying to get in? Volkswagen, maybe? Kia, maybe? Hyundai, maybe? I don't know, because yes. You people are still drinking the moonshine that's coming out of that Toyota injector into the Speedway, I'm sure. But I had to laugh at that, aggressively pursuing the new manufacturers to come in. That is just too much for me to absorb. Reimagined, too much to absorb. Now, how many of you heard what Keselowski had to say about the cars after his accident this past weekend? Of course, a lot of people are throwing that off on the fact that Keselowski can't drive, and that's probably why he wrecked. It had nothing to do with the car. But he brought it up and then later backtracked it a little bit on Twitter. But what really got me is I watched the after race confab between Dale Jarrett and Kyle Petty. Was Kyle Petty running his mouth, as Kyle Petty is very apt to do at any given time. But he said the one thing that just really ticked me off, and if I had your number, Kyle, I'd call you up and tell you about it. But this is what he said. Keselowski, if you're going to talk about it, if all your fans going to talk about we need to do something with the cars, why don't you come sit down and tell us what we need to do? Well, Kyle, buddy, there is five or six of us sitting right here tonight, and a whole bunch of listeners out there that have been trying to tell you dumbasses for the last 10 years what you need to do to the cars, and you have not listened. NASCAR has not listened. Steve O'Donnell has not listened. Nobody has listened. So don't tell me that you want somebody to come up with a suggestion, because I'll be right there in your face, or as DW once said, if there's any Kmarts left open in the country, I'll meet you in the Kmart parking lot and we'll talk about what needs to be done with the cars. Amen. And Hugh is going to like this, because one thing they need to do, get rid of the splitter. Another thing they need to do is get rid of the bump stops. Get rid of the spring binding. Get rid of, you know, get them off the ground a little bit. 4 or 5 inches off the ground, not running down like a snowplow. That was such a senseless remark on your part, Kyle Petty. I am ashamed of you. And I'm sitting here in my studio right here tonight looking at probably 50 Kyle Petty autographs over all these things my mother collected over her lifetime, because she adored Kyle. But it was just the thing that NASCAR cannot seem to realize, that they are going down the road to oblivion, and I hate to see it, because I love the sport and I still watch it. I just can't imagine, and I can't even reimagine what you people are thinking. What are you thinking, Brian France? Or are you capable of thought? Is there anything in that twisted little mind of yours that brings any logic at all into the picture about what you may need to do to save the sport? I doubt it. Seriously, you're trying to destroy it. That's what you're doing. I don't know what Lisa France Kennedy is doing. I thought she was going to be pretty good at trying to step in and save it. I know Jim France is a good guy, because I've been around him enough to know he's a good guy, got a lot of things going on. And I mean, what are they doing talking about trying to say we didn't have anything to do with moonshine, had nothing to do with establishing the sport? Huh? Obviously, you're still drinking it. I mean, Junior Johnson has got to be insanely jealous over the amount of alcohol that you're brewing to get in the state that you have gotten in, when he was so long and so good at it, and now it makes what he gets like pure drinking water compared to what you guys are drinking. Or are you smoking it? Or are you snorting it? Man, I don't know. But you can't find a bigger bunch of idiots put in one place than you can in Daytona and in Charlotte, where these people are trying to run a sport into the ground. And remember, I like NASCAR. I want NASCAR to survive. I want to be able to watch races on Sunday. I'm not big on watching them on Saturday night, but watch them on Sunday. And another thing, if I had heard them say one more time that Kyle Busch had a chance to win the Xfinity race and the the Cup race in the same day, which has never been done. Well, you damn idiots, how many times have there ever been an Xfinity race and a Cup race in which the same driver competed in the same day? Man, y'all need to put those mason jars back in the back part of your studios and show us some racing, show us some common sense, and get rid of all these people that know nothing about what they are trying to do. It's like something, I can't remember the entire joke, but it was one time, I think it was Spanky and Stymie on the Little Rascals, and Spanky asked Ivy what he was doing, and he said he really didn't know, but he was just trying to figure it out as he went along. So anyway, I'm wound up with all that. I just really am sick of hearing NASCAR plead the fifth. Ha, ha, ha. You get that? Mason Jar, not the real fifth, but plead the fifth on everything they're trying to do, because they're not trying to do anything. All they're trying to do is bring more money in the sport. I hope you figure out a way to get your $30 million investments back on this reimagined deal at Richmond. You know, you can always set up a steal up there. I'm sure, you know, they had one down there in Middle Georgia under the third turn, I think. Now, you got a tunnel. You might as well fill it in, because nobody's going to come to the infield in a car. So just fill in part of that tunnel and set you up a steal there. So you'll be worth something and maybe can earn back some of that $30 million. But that's it. I'm finished. Back to you, Jeff.
Well, imagine him getting wound up.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, that didn't even start it. I had so much to go on tonight. I had to cut it out. I'm sorry, Hugh. What were you saying?
Do you think all of us would make a good tech crew? We could tell them how to fix their cars?
You could, and more than likely Bopper could, you know. And all I can say is get rid of the splitters, get rid of the bump stops, get rid of the, you know, get them off the ground a little bit, you know. You go back and watch any YouTube race, and there are a lot of them on there from the 60s and some from the 70s. And you look at those cars, and you look at how off the ground they are, and you tell me that racing wasn't good, go look at the 64 Daytona 500 and the duels that were going on that track. I mean, it was just fantastic. I'm sorry, Jeff.
No, I was going to say, just like my dad used to say, you could run a good-sized dog under them.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really could. It was the kind of thing where we had cars that looked like cars. Now, if you were, say, if you were Dodge and NASCAR came to you and said, hey, we want to get you in our sport. We aggressively are pursuing you to get you in our sport so you can come in here and win races and sell your cars. And Dodge is going to say, and now how are they going to know it's a Dodge? Now, we go put a decal on it. And it's going to say Dodge, but it's not going to look like anything that's sitting in our showroom.
Well, it's a simple explanation. The way they're going to know it's a Dodge is because of all the money Dodge is going to have to spend. After they give NASCAR all the money they're going to give them to get back in, then Dodge is going to have to spend another fortune just to get people to know that they're in NASCAR racing. So NASCAR wins because they're getting money out of Dodge, and then they're getting Dodge to spend all this advertising money and all the Dodge dealers around the country to participate in it to promote NASCAR.
And speaking of spending all that money on commercials, did you watch the race Sunday? Saturday? Did you watch the race Saturday night?
I didn't.
They had the same five commercials over and over and over and over and over.
That's not a good sign.
No, it was the same five commercials. And sometimes when they would break for commercials, they'd start off with those two dippy dudes. No, they would start off with those two dippy dudes sitting in the car at that drive-in restaurant that makes you think they serve food.
Yeah.
They would start with that, and then that would be the middle commercial, and then that would be the ending commercial in their five-minute commercial break. So they couldn't even get enough advertisers to fill the advertising spots that they have. And they think they're going to be able to go out and sell more, you know, and they talk about the great crowd. I'm sorry, Cody. Go ahead.
Want to go to Sonic?
I wasn't going to mention the name. I'm not giving them free publicity, but you know, it just amazes me that NASCAR thinks of their fans as they do. They think, you know, our fans are so dedicated to us, they're going to watch whatever we put on, no matter how crappy it is. It's not going to matter. And for me, they're right, because I like to see cars race, even though what you had Saturday night, that wasn't a race. That was this clean air crap where you can get a 15-second lead. And I like Martin Truex. Even if he does drive one of those crappy Toyotas, I still like him. And I was glad to see him win the race, providing somebody else couldn't beat him. But, you know, when you've got a race this day and time, when there's supposed to be so much equity between the cars, and you can get out there because of clean air and build up a 15-second lead over people like Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson and Kevin Harvick, there is something wrong. Also, we now know that apparently Kyle Busch, for another race, finished with a lug nut gone. And they've suspended his crew chief three times, or three different crew chiefs. But now people are telling me one lug nut doesn't make a difference. You know, if you have two or more gone, or two or more loose, that's what it takes. But you can have one gone, and that's no problem. But you can't find it in the rule book, because you can't find the rule book, because they're tearing pages out of it to fuel the steel
we had
that they're making their moonshine.
Lengthy discussions about that very thing, lug nuts and all that stuff, when they changed all the structure about having all the inspectors on pit row and how they're going to look for those kind of things. And remember when we had all that discussion?
Yep.
Same thing. So, yep. Cool.
Well, I'm sorry that I got so wound up.
No, we like it when you wound up.
Well, I had another good 15 minutes to wind it up. I was so hot at Kyle Petty and what he said. I started to call his daddy and said, take him in and give him a good butt whipping, because he sure deserves it.
How long is the contract with Monster Energy? Is it 1 year or 2 years?
2 years, I heard, at $30 million a year. That's what I was told.
Well, that's what I was thinking,
by several different people that should know.
I wonder if they are happy campers about it.
Do you think they possibly could be?
I don't know.
I mean, what
I wouldn't
they
think so. But hell, they had that damn fight at Daytona in the middle of the race for the rainout, which was the stupidest thing I ever saw.
Yeah, I know. They have to go to fights. They have to go to motorcycle, motocross out in the infield and all that stuff to supposedly keep an interest in what's going on the stock car track. And, to my brother Richard, he said, let's drink to that, Tim. Okay, let's go get a jar of moonshine. You know what? Speaking of that, I have a bottle of Junior Johnson's moonshine. Remember when he came out with that?
Yep.
He gave me a bottle of it, he autographed it, and I have got it right here in the lair, unopened.
Well, come on down here in the studio, we'll
come
help you
the
with
studio
it.
And we'll help
you
with
just
that.
Just imagine what my tirade would have been like had I been in Junior's moonshine tonight.
It had been...
That would be something to think about. But no, it's I want to see NASCAR succeed. I want to see NASCAR come back to where we've got a foothold in the world of sports. And what we have right now is, I think, holding on by our fingernails to what? I don't know. I mean, it's like the Tiddlywinks contest on ESPN will draw more people.
I'm sure it will.
Than our races.
You don't see a lot of Tiddlywinks nowadays. You see a lot of racing. All right, it's time to go.
I don't want to go.
It's time to go. Please. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, Tim, Cody, Jack, Bobby, Hugh, and all of you folks out there for tuning in. Appreciate all of you. As always, we'd like to say a very special thank you to the men and women at Servalan Military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can be this. To each and every one of you, good night. God bless all.
Racism.